live from New York. It's Saturday night.
Starring Benjamin Kerrigan. Ben looks at the camera kind of knowingly, but he's holding a hot dog in one hand.
Mm-hmm.
Co-host Liz Bowes. And she's playing like a flute saxophone on the sidewalk.
But then I just stop and I look up and it's like, oh, I didn't know you guys were there.
Guest host this evening, John Kay.
I'm eating a sandwich.
And then he's on the street literally chowing down a sandwich and then he falls over because he's just so full. And your favorite guest host, Reed the Man Young.
And then he gets to make the Bismarcky face from Yo Gabba Gabba.
Garrett, are you the featured player this week?
Yeah.
He's tonight's musical guest.
Musical guest.
Hosting for the 50th time. Who is the guy who always hosts SNL? I forget his name.
Alec Baldwin, Tom Hanks, yeah. Or John Goodman.
Tom Hanks! Hey, everyone. This is Tom Hanks. Glad I could be here to host this Fan Gamer podcast. We're going to consider that the opening to this show number 55.
In which
we talk about how much we love Chrono Trigger. But before we begin, after we've introduced all of our awesome, we have a huge crew tonight.
Because we didn't just do it.
Because we already did it. No, it was good. We have a couple of fun things to start off the show with before we even get into what we've been doing. We want to talk about some really nice email that we received from fans of the podcast. This is fan number 53. They say themselves from a Jessica... who is probably written us the nicest email we have ever had, ever. I'm not going to read it word for word, but we just wanted to say, Jessica, you're awesome. Thank you for saying that you really like our podcast and that we should keep doing it. We appreciate your kind words. And we want to encourage other people to send us emails of any type.
Now this is a challenge. Be nicer than her.
Or it doesn't even have to be nice. You could be like, you know what, guys? You could improve in this way. We'll take the feedback. We're bros. It's
you know
cool.
Who did that this week was Mudbastard, who he wrote us,
wasn't this the original, scathing review?
Not the original scathing review.
He was the first
original...
real constructive feedback review who's like, I give you 3 because of this. And then he retracted it and gave us a 4-star because he's like, I think you fixed some of those things.
Nice.
Yeah, the original scathing review, I have iTunes open, comes from 1337 Pickpick, who said, we fail at life and podcasting.
Because we weren't talking about Earthbound.
It's true.
You're supposed to be an Earthbound podcast. Where's Earthbound?
Watch that guy listening right now, and he's like in tears because we're mocking him.
He hated our podcast a year ago, and yet he's been listening every week.
Every episode.
Foaming at the mouth.
He's just hoping we talk about Earthbound. Us saying the word Earthbound right now. He's like in convulsions and happiness.
But, so you can send us email to podcast@fangamer.com. Our reviews on iTunes, we like them. But we just wanted to thank those people for the reviews. Do we have anything to add to the Mudbastard review, Liz?
Yeah. Are we going to actually read the Mudbastard review?
I'm going to skim it and say, as I do with all readings, school or otherwise, wink. But Mudbastard says he wanted to flirt with Ben, and he wanted to be the first one in 2011 to do it. And so Ben, he says, hi in a seductive voice.
Mm. Wait.
Hi.
Wait, did he type that out, like, in a seductive voice?
In the review, it says
And
that.
I quote, so, hi, Ben, imagine I said that in something approaching a seductive voice. Mm. So if there's, like, a limit on seductive voice, it's approaching it, but never quite reaches it.
Right, so the calculus of seduction.
I'm trying to...
Yeah.
The vision's coming to my mind right now, and I like it.
Delta seduction is what we're discussing.
Change of seduction.
Overtime.
Marginal seduction.
A plus me equals calculus.
Differential
there
seduction.
You go. That's the only kind I know.
I do like that our first review of the year is basically a flirt out to Ben.
Oh, I know.
That is pretty appropriate.
I dig it.
I wish the flirt had come from the guy whose username was Pickle Inspector.
Just for the record, you guys know like, that wanted. Name. I'm sorry to throw you under the bus here, Pickle Inspector, but you know it's a reference. It's not an original Pickle Inspector creation.
Yeah, but whatever. He's the first time I ever saw it, so he's gets credit.
Fair enough.
Yeah, or she. All
right.
wait, so we got other fun, like, user email sort of stuff through the forums, Liz.
Oh, I did get one. I actually... let me leave a space here, since... Arlen from the Starmen forums said that he was working on a game and he wanted some input, and I said to him, if it's okay with you, I want to talk about it on the podcast rather than just giving you my input on the forum. So he hasn't gotten back to me. You snooze, you lose. We're airing your
we're
dirty
doing
laundry.
It now.
Do it live.
If he gets back to me in the next week and says, no, I'm mortified, then you
they're
the
gonna steal my idea.
Alright, so Arlen says he's currently working on building a game with a group, most likely for iPhone, iPad, and he remembered me talking about on the podcast how much I would have loved a multiplayer version of Final Fantasy Tactics, which is true to this day. I would love that game.
Me too, I think I've said that every podcast.
Yeah, and like he says, many people like that idea, and apparently his consortium of people who are designing this game like the idea of a multiplayer tactics game. And the conundrum is, they can't just take Final Fantasy Tactics and remake it. So, and I quote, now for the question, do you, or anyone with Fangamer, for that matter, have any suggestions regarding a setting for our tactical multiplayer game? What I'm looking for here is a concept like Space Pirates or something.
Space Pirates. That's the one,
but,
right
but
there.
More proactive.
I got one. Trinos. But,
Trinos?
The Final Fantasy Tactics with just gnomes.
Like Keebler Elves?
Oh, in trees.
Wait, do you mean like the tree people from Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
Man.
Who just lived in the woods and stripped people's skin off?
Why not just get a license and make an Aqua Teen Hunger Force, like, strategy game and make it multiplayer?
Well, I would play that tactical multiplayer game.
It would be Carl's Tower Defense.
But if you're going to stay true to the Aqua Teen ethos, then it would have to have no point at all.
The game would have to change genres every 2 minutes and be 12 minutes total playtime.
And then it would get bored with itself and just turn itself off.
Yeah.
You're done playing now.
The Moon Knights, yeah. What, Reed?
And then as soon as the game is over, you turn the console off real quick before the next game comes on. Because no other games are worth playing on there.
After that.
Yeah, the Brack Show game is so far just vaporware.
Okay, but no, that's in all seriousness, if you were going to suggest what Final Fantasy Tactics style like world, I mean, obviously the fantasy realm is easy, but I'd like to see something like in it's like Final Fantasy VIII. People don't really like that game, but I think that sort of in between time period where it's supposed to be like sort of modern but sort of with magic. That could be an interesting...
Like a steampunk?
Yeah, a steampunk kind of.
I don't know. I mean, that's been a little overdone, I feel. What hasn't been overdone...
It's true.
...is one of my favorite games is a game called Skies of Arcadia, and it's about air pirates being awesome.
Oh,
Skies
that
of
would
Arcadia.
Be awesome.
And Matt's talked about that.
Oh, that is a great game.
Although it's in...
But I don't know how that would work with a tactical game, but make it happen.
Right, because you need some ground.
Yeah.
It's all in the sky. But no, I think you're right, because, like, that's a really cool, like... Like where everyone flies everywhere in airships.
Yeah.
And,
well,
yeah.
Couldn't you do that as a tactical if instead of individual units,
you have, like,
the ships were your units?
Oh,
and instead of different classes, you'd
have
different
ship types? Game designer Liz. Have you been playing Game Dev Story for iPhone, Liz? Is that what
Not
this is?
Yet. Angry Birds has been all consuming.
I don't know, man. Like,
no,
maybe there would be certain levels where, like, I'm sorry for, like, interrupting, but, like, I had an epiphany here.
Go
it's
ahead.
Great. Like, it's actually not great. But no, like, you would have some levels where it's, like, airship battles, but then, like, sometimes, like, there'll just be, like, two of you, so, like, you board their other ship, and then you have, like, the tactical battle on the ship, and it'd be awesome, maybe.
This should be a segment. This is great. We should just, every week, we should talk about a game that someone should make. This is awesome.
That is true.
Anyway, what do you say, John?
But, like, boarding the ship could be really boring, though, because, like, that seems to be the worst parts in RPGs, where you're just slowly going through a ship, like Super Mario RPG or Chrono Cross.
Like, right. Oh, no, 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 I mean, like, they would be, like, the same sorts of levels, where, like, you fight on a grid with ships, but then, like, there would be levels where you fight on a grid with people on a ship, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, so you could have actual, like, the pilots could go into different ships, that could affect, like, how it works, you know, how front mission, you're in the mechs.
Oh, yeah,
could
yeah,
you have
yeah.
pilots in the mech.
Yeah, yeah.
How Jin are kind of organized in, Golden Sun, how, like, your class changes depending upon how many little buddies you have allocated
yeah, yeah,
to you.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like that. Wait, John really wants to say something. John.
Well, there's something where you can also use the weather to your advantage, or how you can affect the weather or blow clouds
snap.
Like lightning, or maybe there's hail or ice, and maybe that can obscure or slow down your other units.
Or there's global warming, so like ozone rays are coming through and melting your like skin.
Yeah. Or there's an area where you can electrify certain clouds, so there's a barrier where other ships can't get through. Or you freeze certain clouds or something where maybe you use weather along with this whole tactical...
I'm really liking this game so far, Ben. Yeah.
I am, too. You can do elevation changes, too, to, like, change the setting of where you are and whether or not you go above the cloud barrier.
And, like, a different
dimension. It's also got multiplayer.
Or maybe there's even a ship that can spew mud and create an island out of a cloud or something like that to prevent, you know...
Oh, man. John's already getting into the real technical stuff. Dang.
However, I want to caution the creator. If this is supposed to be a good Japanese-style RPG... Whatever you're doing for the first two-thirds of the game, at the end it has to be about killing God. So you wanna keep that in mind.
Yeah.
You have to mention a god and then kill it. It's Chekhov's god.
What were you gonna say, Reed?
I was just gonna say, I'm still pretty excited about Final Fantasy VI Jersey Store Adventures.
That was pretty good, too. Who linked that to us? John Brentz?
I think so. I don't know anything about Jersey Shore, but that was a funny video.
Well, the crux of Jersey Shore is every day you go to the gym, you tan, and you do the laundry. Because you got to wear the shirt before the shirt, and then you have to wash that. So.
So I think that's a good a lot of feedback, right? That's enough for them to get started.
Yeah.
Give us a demo.
Make it happen.
That was very generous of us to give them all of our trade secrets. I feel like...
Put us in the credits.
I'm trying to remember. Skip it. My joke won't be that funny if I just scratch at it.
I'm keeping that in just because you said that.
All right, so let's move on to what everybody's been up to. Let's start with Reed. What have you been doing, man? You get to play any games lately?
I don't know if this was the case last time, but in the past month, I've probably played 50 games of Catan.
Oh really?
Really that many?
On my iPhone, I have completely mastered this game.
Reed, I'm just curious, is this because maybe at some point you got beat really bad at Catan, like it was insulting and you're like, I need to become the best there ever was?
Yeah, it was kind of the beginning of my journey when I saw my mom killed by a sheep and that's been
my Shepland was behind you in flames.
Yeah, Shepard burned behind me.
No, this wasn't the time when I completely decimated you at Catan in your own house, right? Not just...
I'd like to move on. Can we?
No comment.
Or when he had one card left, I was like, well, we'll rob Reed again and take the one card.
Hey, Reed, let me guess. What color you pick is, green.
Yes, I am always green, and I choose the character... Because I play iPhone Catan against the computer, and I choose the character with short... It looks like his... You know how Cotton Hill in King of the Hill, he doesn't have shins at all? Because they just tied
it in. I do know that about Cotton.
Yeah, they sewed his feet to his knees. The guy, my character, has no forearms. He just sewed his hands to his elbows.
Oh, so he's a flipper boy.
So he's the T-Rex of Shepherds.
Yeah, pretty much. He's the T-Rex of Shepland, and... Yeah, I figured out that you can take the computer for a ride. All you have to do is just trade every round, and they like if the computer wants any one item, they'll give you anything for it. So,
your version is much easier than my version.
I know. I've just absolutely destroyed this game.
All right, Catan. It'll be interesting next time we play. Yeah, I was gonna say when you play against real people, though, I want to see how if those skills transfer over.
Actually, I've had a lot of fun. I pretty much. All I do now, because I know I'm going to win, so I just play the first round where you set everything up. and then I, it's just kind of a...
Then you quit?
Oh, you're like the girl who builds a house in The Sims and then gets bored once there's people in it.
Yes, exactly. Except I'm not a girl.
I'm that girl, by the way.
All right.
But yeah, that's been pretty much the extent of my gaming recently. I got a video card for my computer, so it doesn't suck anymore, and a better video card. And I haven't really had a chance to use it.
Is this for your Mac?
No, for my PC back home I built. So.
All right. So anybody else actually been playing games lately? Because all I've been playing is Angry Birds, and I was utterly devastated to find out that when I finally beat level 2, whatever it was that I was stuck on for like 2 months, and now I'm on level 3, 4, that Liz had not only beaten the entire third world, she's on to the fourth world.
Oh, damn.
It's true. I think I'm on like 419 or something crazy.
Oh my
like
god!
That.
So wait, the iPhone or iPad? Because you can skip levels in the iPad.
I'm not skipping any levels on principle, good. But I am using the iPad because I just feel like it's easier to do.
Oh, because you can see the whole screen at once.
Yeah, and just it's bigger. It's the iPhone. I don't know. Like I have small hands. I know this about myself, but I still feel like I'm kind of doing a weird crab claw thing when I play games on it.
What?
I don't know. I'd like. There's more range of motion on the iPad. I don't think you can disagree with me on that.
No, I mean it's a bigger screen, but I'm just picturing you with like these pincer claw things going yeah. on your hand, like and making weird noises as you try and play Angry Birds. Like it's Dialga too noise. Small for this. Yeah, Dialga yeah. noise.
You guys mm-hmm. should know that if Steve was here, you would be getting a 5-minute lecture as we speak about different ways that gamers can hold mice.
That's going to be our fan gamer news.
Oh, God.
We're going to get him to record that in post.
That'd be pretty funny,
how
actually.
How he hacks his mouse.
Well, we have to wait 10 minutes to play Left 4 Dead because he's got to set up the drivers for his mouse. Which should be plug and play.
He needs to plug his mouse into a 110-volt outlet to make sure he can supply
the power for it.
Yeah, if Steve didn't already have a good advantage over us already.
Yeah, yeah. That's helping out a lot. Anyway, I'm on level 3-4 of that, but... Well, actually, you know, John, what game were you playing last night that was pretty sweet?
Yeah, so, John, what were you playing?
We went out over to our friends Nat and Dory's place, and we were playing...
Natty Bumpo.
Liar's Dice.
So, in Red Dead Redemption, I don't think I talked about it, but they have Liar's Dice in that game, which is a... I had never played it before I played Red Dead Redemption, but it's a... So you have three players. Each player has an actual, like, cup filled with, like, five dice, kind of Yahtzee style, and you all... You know, shake up your dice, slam down the table, keep the cup over it, and then lift it up and just look at your numbers. And the goal of the game is to quote how many of a certain number of dice are on the table total. And then someone either has to call your bluff, say you're right on, or make their own bluff or their own guess of their own. And it just keeps going around until someone calls the bluff. And then if they were right, then the person who called the previous bluff has to remove a dice. But if you were wrong, you have to get rid of a dice until you run out. In Red Dead, it was super complicated, and it still probably sounds utterly complicated right now as I describe it. But what did you think of playing Liar's Dice for? Well, I played for at least an hour and a half.
Oh,
or so.
We played two, three rounds. It was a lot of fun.
Well, it was because we wanted to play for money, but no one had any money, so instead we betted like whatever you
Stand
had
cards,
on you.
Yeah.
Like I had like a Benihana sushi card, and Jen.
I had a Proto Man sticker.
Mari had like some like little picture of a Game Boy on him.
Oh, that was cool. Yeah.
And Nat brings out because he works for Nintendo one of those a Wii wheel for Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And he bets that.
Oh yeah.
So
he also bet like a little laser pointer. And a second round, he brought out two
Pokemon puzzles.
Yeah,
60-piece puzzles, which Mare won. So good for him.
With the passion of a Pokemaniac.
Yes.
So yeah.
Liar's Dice.
How was that meetup, by the way? Meeting that dude.
It was awesome. So Mare Odomo. We got to meet him yesterday. He does the comic. Letters to an Absent Father, the Pokemon comic that you may or may not have read, which is awesome. The big news is that he agreed to come on our Pokemon Black and White podcast that we're going to do. So that'll be fun to have him on for that, and we can all geek out about it. But yeah, it was a really good time. It was a wonderful evening. We eat foods.
Yeah, there were some times where I couldn't help but to embarrass myself.
What? Wait, what? No way.
Yes, way. Hey, do you know what I discovered? I rediscovered something new. Ice cream and chocolate syrup. It was really good.
We're like, how did you just discover this?
How did you just rediscover?
I didn't know it was a discovery that could go away.
That's what we all kind of said in rebuttal, but yeah, so that was what we would did that last night.
Actually,
Ben, can you? Oh, go ahead, Reed.
I was going to say, I'd like to tell you, you don't have to have John on the podcast next week, because I can tell you now what he's going to be playing next week.
What's that?
What's that?
Red Dead Redemption! Happy birthday, John!
Oh!
Happy birthday, John!
Happy birthday, John!
Oh, yeah!
I was looking forward to getting that, actually.
Oh, I'm glad!
Awesome, thank you, Reed.
I'm putting birthday music in the background right now. You guys can't hear it, but it's playing.
Don't use happy birthday, man. That's copyrighted.
Do Feliz no, not that one. A T. Do it in Spanish. It's not copyrighted then.
Okay.
Do the one from Futurama.
Yeah. Or the one from Home Movies, the birthday song. You guys remember that? He goes, oh, birthday is a doodly-doo, a ding-dong, doodly-doodly, ding-dong-doo. A birthday, birthday, how do you do? Open presents, cake is too. A good thing to have on a birthday day is ice cream and presents coming your way, cause presents are good to open up. Hope there's something good inside for me. It's a birthday time of year for you. A happy birthday, doodly-doo. A birthday is a good time. Eat up the chocolate cake all night.
As long as we're on the digression, there is the Spirit Formation Journey song that Master Shake writes in Aqua Teen. That's
that.
Like a 30-minute rock opera that's about like the bells chiming when your soul flies
on
free
your
from
birthday.
Hell.
And the owl swoops down from the moon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, well,
I have so many options.
He got Geddy
here.
Lee to sing it, right?
What, Reed?
He got Geddy Lee to sing it.
He did get Geddy Lee to sing that, I think, and didn't pay him.
Oh.
I love it.
All right, well, hey, let's move along. Happy birthday, John.
Happy birthday, John.
But Ben,
yes.
Can you tell us more about the game you had played last week but hadn't actually played it yet?
Okay, I know we're on a limited
Ghost
time frame
Trick.
Here, so I'm going to ask, do you want me to talk about that, or do you want me to talk about Magfest?
Ooh. Crap. I kind of want to hear about Magfest.
Since we're on the subject of games,
oh, he's
let's hold the audience about Magfest. Let's talk about Ghost Trick.
Okay, all right, we'll
what do you guys think?
Ghost Trick?
Okay, I want to hear about it.
Okay,
is it
Ghost
awesome?
Trick. It is amazing. It is
for Wii or
DS, so
right?
It's for the DS.
I want to get this, Ben. Damn it!
Yeah. Actually, Corey Schmitz and Mari were talking
there,
about
yeah.
it. They're really into it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very enjoyable puzzle game. Well, adventure puzzle game.
Is it more like Phoenix Wright or more like the Professor Layton?
It's. I'd say neither, really. Like, it's
ooh,
sort of got
intriguing.
An action element to it. Like, essentially, it is a point-and-click sort of game, but you are a spirit that goes around possessing objects around the environment and, like using them, using your ghost tricks to, like, manipulate them to, like, get to other areas or to stop certain people from doing certain things. Like, for instance, like, the very first thing you do, it's, like, you possess, like, a little, like, traffic gate, and you can use your ghost trick on it to flip it up and knock a gun out of some guy's hand. Or, I mean, you could do stuff like that to, like, flip up the sign and, like, that now puts you at a higher position where you can go possess other items and move to different,
but
different
like,
parts.
Kind of like in real time, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it does have a real time element. Like, when you go into ghost mode, like, when you actually move around and possess things, time stops. But in order to actually, like, open up new opportunities, you have to get out of that and, like, wait for something to pass by. Or wait for something to happen. Like, for instance, you're stuck on, say you're stuck on, like, a lamp or something. You need to wait for someone to, like, run across the room so you can possess, like, something in their pocket as they pass by you. So they run across the room, so you're over there where they are now. And it's...
The idea that you get to possess, like, some guy's keys in his pocket
yeah.
or his wallet.
Or a donut.
Or a donut.
Yes, you do possess a donut.
That's awesome.
Or, I think it's a bowl of donuts, actually. But, yeah.
This sounds really fun.
It is a very fun game. Dang I mean, it is a mystery game, and it's unfortunate to say that, like the Phoenix Wright games and all that stuff, there's still only one correct option. But
that'd get frustrating.
It's sort of. But it is still pretty fun to, like, experiment with things, because, like, you have the ability to go 4 minutes to death, and you can keep going back as much as you want. So, like, you can play around...
Wait, before someone's death, you said? Is this like that Groundhog's Day? You're trying to stop the old man from dying?
You're trying to stop... You're trying to prevent people from dying. Like, you're dead, and...
Oh, wow.
I guess your mission for the night is to stop people from dying so you can learn how you died.
It's like reverse, what's that movie that's all about this, how you miss your final destination or something?
Donnie Darko.
It's like reverse final destination.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So, initial destination.
I don't know. It's an incredibly interesting game. Like, the style of it is amazing. Like, it's probably the best 2D animation I've seen in any game ever.
That's really
I'm excited.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Liz? Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, are you...
No, I was going to draw a comparison. Have any of you heard of a game called Out of This World?
I heard of it, yes.
Yeah. There's, like, a sort of rotoscoped graphical style in there where... I guess the same could be, like, for the original, like, really old Prince of Persia game, if you've played that.
Yes, I remember playing that old one, yeah.
It's a very similar style to that, where, like... It's all, like, these solid colors and just shapes, like, moving around and stuff. And, I don't know, it looks really, really cool.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I'll have to check it out.
See, my New Year's resolution is not to buy games, like, to try and really wait for that great game. But, man, you make this difficult, Ben. Like, that sounds like my kind of game.
I don't know, like, I've just started playing it, but it is a great game.
Yeah. Let's see. So, Ben, we got John, we got Reed, Liz...
Mm-hmm.
What have you been playing besides Angry Birds?
I mostly gave up my turn to discuss the Arlen thing, since I knew you guys were on a limited time span.
Yeah,
so
we are. Are you going to defer?
I was happier designing a game from scratch. I'm deferring, yes.
Oh, Liz. Podcast Mother Teresa.
I could tell you about the matchstick game we played in Operations to discuss constrained optimization, but I'm going to guess
Well, I would actually enjoy hearing about that. Probably later we should...
Wait. Constrained Operation Matchstick? I love that game.
Yeah, it's...
I play it on my iPhone all the time. The computers are totally easy, though.
You know, I would bet that it exists for business students to play on their iPhone, because business students are sick people. And they would like playing a game where you just move matchsticks through bottlenecks.
You gotta keep it easy.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta optimize your outputs and your inputs and, you know, synergize the workflows.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Lilo.
Shift all the paradigms.
Ben,
I just remember, like, a cool purchase. I'm not gonna get into MAGFest right now, but I made a very interesting purchase that I think you guys might be interested in. I'm gonna
is
say
it another
Mijumaru like
plush?
Times. No, unfortunately. It is a NES reproduction of Earthbound Zero.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's like... Yeah, and fortunately, this one doesn't, like, steal any Starman.net artwork and claim it's real.
That's nice.
Yeah, they've been jacking Emilio's artwork for, almost a decade now.
Okay, well then, wait, but if we're going to do But I Digress, I have one short one. I got a, it's just funny, because I think the people here will appreciate this. You guys all know Two Player Productions. You know Paul Owens, the director of lots of things there. He sent me a funny Facebook message. He was asking me something else, but he ended it with, "And I'm wearing a Ness shirt right now. It's pretty great."
No way.
I know, right? The fact that he's got the Ness shirt, the shirtness, and he's wearing it, and then he would admit to it. And obviously my immediate response as soon as I got that message was, Pixar, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I didn't get
prove it.
He said, I already took it off.
He was yanking your chain.
It was just a PR stunt to get on the podcast.
It was. But anyway, it
freaking worked.
I thought people here would appreciate that. So anyway, we can move on. So we'll take a short break here. And
are we gonna do Fangamer News this week? Since we have the people here, are we gonna record it now? Or are you guys short on time?
I really think that people would be interested in hearing a little more about MAGFest. So I was gonna try to see if I can get like Charlie on Skype or something, and we can have a discussion.
Oh, that's actually a good sort of Fangamer News.
I'd probably say Fangamer News has pretty much happened this week with Ben and Charlie at MAGFest.
Yeah, do that, Ben. That's a good idea, buddy.
Yeah, right. Ben, take the load off for me.
No,
the
no,
Bears
that's
a, are playing.
No,
well
but
this
he's right.
Weekend.
I mean, it's not every time that we've got people at a show and can talk about it. So yeah, definitely do that.
Hello, everybody. This is Charlie with Audio Candy. The greatest feature of Chrono Trigger was its characters. The mechanics, the graphics, the time-traveling story wouldn't have meant a thing if you didn't have an emotional connection to the characters and a drive to see them succeed. Perhaps you connected with Princess Nadia for her contempt for her rank and her troubled relationship with her father. Maybe you respected Frog's notions of duty and honor and wanted to see him fulfill his destiny as a hero. Or perhaps you resonated with Magus' drive for revenge, no matter the cost. In the end, I felt a connection to each of the characters in their own way. I liked them, and wanted them to not only succeed at their overall mission, but to find happiness and fulfillment in their own lives. The only exception is the main character, Chrono, who was silent with only a secondhand vague suggestion of a noble, if rambunctious, personality. Of course, this is because Chrono is you, the player. For all our self-interested goals and ambitions, it's hard to conceive an emotional attachment to yourself. So, why is Chrono's death sad? Why do we bother to bring him back? We have no emotional attachment to him, and the other characters are more interesting to watch anyway. The reason we care that Chrono dies is that the characters we care about feel his loss. They miss you. In the end, the only thing that will make your friends and family and everyone you care about grieve simultaneously is for them to lose you. And so it is for the memory of the main character that the saddest song in the game is dedicated. There are nearly 100 Chrono Trigger remixes on OC Remix, not including the OC Remix albums. That's more than any other game on the site. This is the only arrangement they have of the song At the Bottom of Night. It's entitled The Dark Before the Dawn by Will Buck. Thank you. this arrangement is over 5 years old. It's well composed, but suffers from some rather bad sampling. That is, the lack of natural instruments is obvious, making the track sound dated. So, what I'm really trying to say is, somebody, please, make a better arrangement of this song.
This is Ben here for Fangamer News, joined here with Fangamer's own Charlie, who you just heard his audio candy. A very, very sad song. How you doing, Charlie?
I'm doing okay.
Just okay?
Just okay. I'm still tired.
Is it because Magfest is long and gone? Because that's why I'm only feeling okay.
Well, not only that, but mostly because you almost get no sleep that entire time during Magfest, and, it was quite a drive to and from, so I'm still a little, just kind of recovering.
Are you still in the recovery state from that?
I guess.
Not that I'm saying you shouldn't be, but...
Well, I mean, I went straight from driving and then went back to work, and it's...
Yes. Well, this is your first recovery weekend since. Anyway, we should stop babbling about MAGFest and actually explain it. MAGFest, the Music and Gaming Festival, was a four-day, non-stop festival in Alexandria, Virginia for gaming and music, essentially. And the reason you're hearing this is because there was a rather large Fangamer presence at MAGFest. And no, it's not just because me and Charlie were there, but there was, I would say, an astronomical amount of people wearing Fangamer stuff there. Would you agree?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it was there was definitely at least 10 people I saw every day that I went, and not to mention all the people that I just didn't notice.
Yeah, like, I had seen people you hadn't seen. You actually took a lot of pictures of those people. Like, did you ever, like, count how many pictures you got?
I didn't take all that many pictures, just because sometimes I'd see them and they look like they're busy and I don't want to...
Yeah.
But, there were quite a few, and at first I wasn't even taking pictures. I didn't even start until, like, the third day in. Before that, I was just handing out, like, pins and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a huge percentage of people. I would say, like, it was more than, PAX. Like, it was a lot more frequent to, like, just turn the corner and see someone wearing, oh, there's a Snowwood hoodie, there's a Question shirt. It was just really cool and heartwarming seeing a million people wearing our shirts and stuff. And if any of you guys are listening, I hope we met you and said thank you and that you're awesome. And, yeah. Anyway, MAGFest itself, it is a fairly small convention, because it's, over here in the south, sort of, near DC. So, it being smaller, it's a lot more of an intimate atmosphere for a convention than, say, PAX or, like, I don't know.
And Otakon and all those bigger
places. Yeah. But because of that, like, it was a lot more intimate and it was a lot easier to hang out and get to know people.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've played video games with several people that I probably would have never really bothered with, I guess.
Yeah,
never
exactly.
Tried to.
And like those same people, like you would see at PAX, and you would exchange a few words, and that's about it. But here, you actually had time to hang out with them, and that was really cool. For instance, I met first and foremost, a pretty awesome, consistent friend to this day now, Ashley Davis of Once Upon a Pixel. And I don't talk to him as much, but Anthony Birch of Hey Ash, Whatcha Playin', and Anthony Saves the World, and other Gearbox righty things. I met and hung out with them, as well as Derek Alexander, the happy video game nerd, Pat the NES Punk and John D and Ito of RetroWare TV. I've been a fan of them for a long time. I mean, they're pretty not that known aside from Derek, but I mean, it was still really great to meet them. And
no, I was just gonna say they do some pretty good work though. So if you don't haven't ever been to RetroWare TV, I do recommend going check them out.
Aside from that, like we saw Matthew Mercer there of There Will Be Brawl rocking a chronometer at one of his panels, which was super awesome. He said it was like one of his favorite shirts ever. And at least I hung out a bit more with the Protomen than I have been able to in the past. Especially with like arm wrestling and stuff, where I finally defeated the gambler after months and months.
Well,
of,
I mean, she immediately got you back, I think.
Okay, or look. I challenged the gambler left-handed, and I defeated her. Just because I lost immediately after right-handed doesn't make a difference. I won.
Okay. Well, I mean, I only took on Kilroy over the weekend, and he, I managed to beat him, and Commander refused to do a rematch.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, he's like, no, I'm not facing Charlie again. He's tough, and I don't feel like dealing with it.
I might lose. I can't do this.
No, I don't think at least I don't think he would lose. But, I mean, I don't know. It would probably be, I guess, embarrassing that he wouldn't immediately win like he's used to.
For everyone else. But no, it was cool meeting, like, the new guy in the band, Ringo
what, Segundo.
Segundo, yes. He is their new guitarist, and he's super awesome and friendly and nice. Aside from that, we met DJ Cutman, who is incredibly obscure, and I think many more people should know about this guy. He makes video game remixes. He is an actual like live DJ and produces like a few rap acts up in upstate New York. And he's just a super cool and friendly guy and crazy talented when it comes to DJing. Aside from that, I mean, meeting all the people wearing Fangamer, and like there was a Hinawa cosplayer there and a Mr. Saturn cosplayer who is actually a Vien of Starman.net, who has been on the site for a while, but was an old friend, so it was cool to meet him. Did you meet any cool people aside from that, Charlie?
There were a couple people that I did want to meet, like the Spoonie one from, I guess he's considered from Guy with the Glasses, but he was pretty popular, so
yeah, he's
oddly enough, he was pretty much unavailable for most of the time, compared to other people.
He had a lot of panels.
Yeah, he had several of them, and yeah. In fact, I think the DJ Cutman rave party ended up having to be moved to a different panel room because
yes.
He was still there at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, but it was okay. We still had a good time at the DJ Cutman rave party. There were, at MAGFest, as there is 24-hour gaming, there's also 24-hour music, essentially. Like, even though the nightly concerts don't really run, like, all day, there's always something going on somewhere, and DJ Cutman was providing beats throughout the whole weekend, and it was awesome. Anyway, but yes, there were 24-hour game rooms available all throughout the center with free play arcade games and like console rooms, and like there was even they called it a museum full of like a bunch of obscure consoles that no one had ever really owned or heard of, and it was really interesting stuff. Like, what were some of your favorite like games that you?
Well, there was this really awesome like head-to-head Tetris game that they had. That well, only the first day that we were actually there, I actually saw it and played against my friend with it. But then, for some reason, it disappeared or it was exchanged for some other game or something. So I wasn't able to play it again.
It disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
It was there the whole weekend?
No, there was a different one. Not the one that everybody was riding on. It was actually in the game room.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
Mm.
But yes, they had a Tetris machine with whiteboard stuff all over it, and I think a fan.
I think it was actually just painted white.
No. It had material on the side. It definitely wasn't paint.
Oh, okay.
Like, I actually wrote on it. I wrote a little Fangamer logo and said, "You guys stole our idea, brr."
Well, actually, that's not fair, because I did see that they had a cabinet from the previous year that they did the exact same thing on. They said, "This is from last year, don't draw on this one, draw on the other one."
Oh, I didn't actually see that one. I guess we stole their idea. Dang it!
Well, it was right next to the NBA Jam cabinet, so if you didn't see it, it's because you weren't looking.
I think I was more focused on NBA Jam is what it was.
Fair enough.
And NBA Jam, they had a cab where you can play 2-on-2, and that was incredible. I was able to play that with you and Mike, against Derek Alexander, the happy video game nerd, and later on I played a one-on-one against Anthony Birch and beat them both. It was great.
We only won by 1 point against Derek, though.
It was good enough. It was a victory.
It's still a win by an inch or a mile.
It's still a win. There's no close. It's either you win or you lose. Doesn't matter. Yeah, they had a lot of arcade cabinets for games that I really like that I haven't really seen before. A bunch of rhythm games like Taiko Drum Master and Poppin' Music and like Guitar Freaks and a lot of those cool Bimani games that you never really see, like Beatmania 2DX. And that was really enjoyable because like the only real way to experience those games is with like the arcade versions, and it was great to finally be able to play them. Were there any like surprises for you, like either arcade or like consoles that you had never gotten to play?
Not really, actually. I mean, really? There were a lot of things that I'd never gotten to play or even seen in arcades, but I mean, since I probably haven't even heard of them, so I guess I couldn't have really wanted to play them before.
I don't know. One other thing that was cool, like in the museum section, they had an MSX console available, and I tried to play SD Snatcher, which was like Snatcher, the Sega CD and PlayStation game by Hideo Kojima, full of like little chibi characters.
What is an MSX? I'm sorry if
MSX.
I'm losing.
Oh no, it's fine. Yeah, I should probably explain it anyway. It's like it was a home computer console. Released, it might have been released by Konami, I'm not sure, but there are a crap ton of Konami games on them. It was the console that had the first Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 in Japan. Huh. Like, it was Japan only, unfortunately, but there were a lot of cool games on it. SD Snatcher, not one of them, mostly because it didn't work. They also had, like, a CDI and, like, a bunch of really obscure Japanese consoles.
Actually, one of the things I found really interesting to see was in the game room there was this dedicated GameCube for the Four Swords Adventures.
Yeah.
So I was watching people play it, and it was really amusing to see the screen. Nothing was going on the actual screen. Everybody was staring at their Game Boys.
Yeah, their
so
Game Boys.
They were sitting. They were sitting in front of this TV with the lines going to it, but they were all staring at their Game Boys. I'm sure it all makes sense if you actually play it, but. It just made me laugh.
Have you never played that game?
I have, but I never played it with the Game Boy. And I was playing it single player, which made the game considerably less fun than I'm sure it's capable of.
No, the cool thing about that game, and I mean, we're kind of digressing here, but whenever you go into a building or like a cave or something, it goes to your Game Boy if you're playing on multiplayer.
It is a really really cool concept to have the two different types of systems working together so intimately. So intricately.
I want to see that happen more. Like, you haven't really... I feel like the Wii was played up to have like that sort of connectivity with the DS, but I never really saw that happen.
Yeah, I think the only thing that really does that with it is probably the Pokemon games, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's about it. There were a bunch of games, and again, there were 24 hours, so there was a lot of sleep deprivation, but a lot of good times had. But aside from that, like, there was a lot of cool like artists and like merch tables set up. Like, did you see a bunch of those? Did you?
Oh yeah, they were really interesting to kind of browse around with and see what they had to offer, because there are a lot of really talented artists out there, and I guess it's kind of getting to a point where it's kind of oversaturated, that there's so many people who make these really good nerdy artwork, and I felt really bad going and browsing and not actually being able to buy most of it, but
especially the people, it's like, hey, we have free cookies.
Aww. I did end up buying this one game that some people had made involving robots and directing them. It was a pretty cool game. I mean, for $10, I got the game and the soundtrack, so I can't say it was a bad purchase. But
was this for PC?
Yeah, they had it for PC and for I believe it was for the 360's independent games.
Oh, what was that called? Like, do you remember the developer name?
Oh shoot, I know it was developed by a company called Space Whale. I want to believe
that's an awesome name.
Yeah, Space Whale Studios. Return All Robots was the name of it.
Hmm. Well, yeah, check that out. That sounds interesting.
I think to actually get it was like only $5 normally, because I paid extra for the soundtrack.
The soundtrack,
which was,
is it good music?
What was the name of the person who did the music? He's like he's a big time OC Remix guy. Zircon.
Well, rad. That's awesome. Well, yeah, like a bunch of other cool guys were there, like the square painter guy, I think his name was, who like painted these huge canvases full of, like, video game pixelized art.
Oh, yeah, he actually had a Saturn Valley that I noticed. Like, as soon as I got there, I was looking down, because the way the place was set up was there were two floors. And at the top floor, there was this big open area where you can actually look down into the artist alley, and that's where we were lining up in order to get our badges to get in. So the entire time we were waiting in line, we looked down and see the stuff, and from a distance, my buddy pointed out the Saturn Valley. I was like, oh man, check that out.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I saw too. There was that, and like, he had a really big Contra one. That was really cool. I bought some cool stuff while I was there. Like, I got a NES pre-production of Earthbound Zero, Mother. I also got, like, all of DJ Cutman's music, as well as the Happy Video Game Nerd DVD. And I'm very satisfied with my purchases. Aside from the game, did you buy anything?
Yeah. Other than the game, I also browsed this one guy. Oh, Kevin Bulk. He does a couple of different comics and stuff. This website called Interrobang Studios. He does some really cool comics that I've usually just only seen him on DeviantArt, and then all of a sudden there he was, and I was like, wow.
Oh, what'd you buy from him, though?
Just a couple of little booklets of some of his comics. It was just to support him, pretty much.
Rad. Again, like, MAGFest was a fairly small adventure. About 3,000 people, I think there were. So again, there was a lot of hanging out. Well, I had a couple I had jotted down here. Cool hangout moments. There was, first of all, meeting Derek Alexander was something I was super pumped for going into MAGFest, because I was a huge fan of his Happy Video Game Nerd videos, as well as his music he makes with Calvin Hansen, Starship Amazing. And the first night, I was wandering around, like, just looking for people and stuff, and I ran into Derek. But he was playing a bunch of Starship Amazing songs on the piano, and, like, I was nerding out pretty hardcore because I was a huge fan of his music. And, I don't know, we palled around a bit. Like, maybe cooler than that even was really meeting Ashley Davis of Once Upon a Pixel. Mostly because, like, it seemed like she was more excited to meet me, because it was like, you're a Fangamer person. I mean, I really liked her stuff, but I was just sort of a fan of her stuff recently. So, I don't know, it seemed cool to have someone that I was excited to talk to be more excited to talk to me.
Well, that's usually the best kind of a greeting, is whenever somebody is actually excited to see you in the first place.
I mean, it wasn't me specifically, it was just like, you're Fangamer.
It's a mutual respect thing. That's the best type of relationship out there.
So. I think the best story I have to share comes from me hanging out with the commander of the Protomen. We were walking back from the main hotel to the Overflow, where we were staying, and it was really cold, and it was, like, super late. And near the end, like, the hotel was right around this corner, and there was a gate separating us and the hotel. And the commander decided that he was gonna jump the gate. But I told him, it's like, dude, you just have to walk this corner here, and that's it. We'll be there in a second. It'll take you longer to jump the fence. And he was like, no, man, there's a fence here. I gotta jump it. So, like, I just couldn't convince him. So he went to go jump the fence, and I was like, I swear to God, I'll be at the hotel quicker than you. And sure enough, like, we met each other at the door of the hotel. And I was like, so yeah, you saved a lot of time just jumping that fence there for no particular reason. He was like, you know what? It wasn't about getting there quicker. It wasn't about saving steps. It's about being an American. And Americans need to jump fences. I needed to jump that fence. So, Commander...
Yeah, you don't get any more American than Commander. That's just the way it is.
You don't get any more American than jumping a fence just because it needs to be jumped. I was proud of my country for a brief moment. Do you have any closing comments about MAGFest? Any other stories to share?
Just that, as far as these sort of conventions go, I would say it's about the middle ground between Nerdapalooza and PAX. Because at Nerdapalooza, is pretty much constantly music in a relatively small setting. Like, it was barely about 1,000 people. And it was pretty much just constant music. There was a couple of other things to do, but honestly, it got a little... You got a little tiresome after a while. Whereas at PAX, it's, you know, 30,000 people, and there's always tons of things to do, to the point that you're a little overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And anything that anybody that you see, I mean, you're probably not going to spend much time with them, because you've got to go see everything. And so I thought MAGFest was a pretty happy medium. There wasn't I guess, constant music, so there were other things to do. It was kind of balanced out by panels.
Yeah.
The only problem was that it was 24 hours. There was always technically
when do
something.
I go to sleep? Do I go dance with Kilroy, or do I go to bed?
Well, that was an obvious choice. But I really enjoyed it. I think it was a pretty good...
It was. It was a lot of fun. And again, really small con out in Alexandria around New Year's, around this time each year. And I think all you guys should come rock out and wear our swag and say hello if you see any of us next year, because, I don't know, I'm definitely going back. I had a blast. And, I don't know, man. There was a lot of demand for us to have a booth there. What do you think about that?
I'd say it's definitely possible. We're always looking to expand into other places. It's just a matter of how we can make it happen.
Again, there were, like, tons of people, like, assuming we had a booth. It's like, so, can I go buy one of your shirts? Like, where's the booth? Where's Reed? And there was no Reed. There was no booth.
I mean, if Halols can make a booth out there and apparently make bank, I mean, I think we can...
They make bank?
I guess. I mean, they keep going to all these conventions, so they must be making something back.
Anyway, thank you, Charlie, for joining me this late at night. Probably go to bed really soon.
Me too.
All right, Fang Ever people, see you at PAX East. Goodbye. Bye.
What's up, y'all? This is DJ Cutman at DJCutman.com, and while I make my swag-ass beats, I like to listen to the Fangamer podcast. What's that? You're saying that this is nobody's real voice? What the hell? I'm a robot master, suck on.
Alright, let's move into show topic, even though John's getting his pants out of the laundry. Oh, he's coming back now. Liz, you really like Chrono Trigger. I think you should intro this segment.
Why do we love Chrono Trigger? How do you even intro a segment like that? Right? My experience with Chrono Trigger...
Wait, do you have an interpretive dance and song you could intro
it was a
with?
Hypothetical question. Oh, so sorry. This is like,
sorry.
I like clocks.
What?
I like clocks.
I like clocks. I like the way they tick.
Talk.
Chrono Trigger. Life is like a store of clocks.
Come on,
that's
all you got.
That's it.
That was really good, though.
That's how we're introing the segment, by the way.
Yeah, totally.
Recorded. There's nothing else to the clock store.
Life is like a store of clocks. You always get another second.
Even broken ones write twice a day.
Wow.
Old country buffet is like a clock. You always go for seconds.
Except if a clock doesn't have a second hand, but I suppose that's also true of old country buffet people who are necrotized to the point where they have no second hand.
I was just going to say that anybody who really likes Chrono Trigger is like, I hate you guys. I thought this was going to be a podcast about the fanboyism towards Chrono Trigger, and all we're doing is making crappy puns.
Old country buffet jokes. I think they'd be pleased.
Let's get this going. I actually made some great show notes for this, and then because I hit the wrong button on my magic mouse, it went backwards. And it was a web page, and I lost all the work I typed. So,
ay Dios mío.
Yeah, but let's begin because Chrono Trigger. I the first time I played it was for FanFest, just this previous year, and immediately as I started getting into it, even a couple hours in, I was like, "This is amazing. This is the kind of game that I really like." And I was happy to say that even coming back to it as an adult, I still felt the same way that I probably would have felt as I was a kid. Like, when Jen was playing it, she's like, I don't want to beat it because I don't want it to be over because there won't be any left to play. And I was like, oh man, that's just how I would have played as a kid.
Yeah. Then you let her discover New Game Plus.
That's true. It is one of the few... I think it has the best replay value. Even though the quests don't really change and you don't get any new character interaction out of it, it's very well done.
So, let's start off. Liz, tell me why you love Chrono Trigger. Give me some reasons, some bullet point itemized list items.
I think the magic system is very cool. Like, the element system, that is what it is, and the attack time battle bar, or whatever those are called, that, again, is pretty standard fare. But double checks and triple checks, I thought were so interesting and cool, and yeah. Maybe games had done something like it before, I don't know, but to me, like, I had never seen anything like it at the time. And it was so neat to see that the choices you made in your party had, like, opened up new options to you just beyond individual movements.
Yeah, like, Chaotic Lemming in the forum thread said the same thing, that balance of simplicity to complexity, that it starts off, I would say, pretty simple, yeah. But yeah. There's actually reasons to use other party members because they can do entirely different little combinations of attacks and moves. And Marty kind of said the same thing of Omnitarian. Why didn't other games copy that? Why didn't other games rip that off? Because that was a really cool thing to do.
And why did Chrono Cross, with 44 characters, include 8 double techs and 4 triple, or excuse me, 2 triple techs? Why?
Are you serious? No, I'm definitely not going to play the game.
Yeah, it was atrocious.
Play it.
Well, a lot of people start off the thread saying that it was actually, like, 2 or 3 people said that the way the game started, the introduction, even before you started the game, the actual, like, demo scene that happens while it goes on was a big deal to them. They really liked that, and it has this real epic feeling as you start.
Oh, absolutely.
With the ticking clock, the pendulum, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel it has kind of a similar, it sets a certain vibe similar to Earthbound. Vibe as well.
Yeah.
Where there was a serious scene with the screen that came in and fuzzed, and then there was the intro of everything around the world. You know, there's an art to that.
There's awesome music happening while it's going on.
High adventure that's beyond compare.
I mean, we could probably do a whole podcast on good intros. There's some games that can do them, and some, like, they set up the whole game. Even if the rest of the game is bad, like, an intro can make you feel good about a game long after other gripes have faded. Like Final
Fantasy. You know what's a good intro, Liz?
Ghost Trick?
Chrono Cross.
That is such a good intro.
I know.
The song, the music from that, holy crap.
Yeah, Yasunori Mitsuda is a boss.
What's really great about the intro, though, is that, like we were saying with Earthbound, but here specifically Chrono Trigger, is that it's like it helps you enter the doorway from where your mind is to where they want your mind to be. It definitely puts that setting.
Yeah, here's how the game's kind of going to start, but we're going to take you somewhere else entirely.
Yeah, that entryway really makes you just delve into the world, into the vibe and the feel and the expectation of what they're going to deliver to you with whatever era that is.
Kind of
whenever
appetizer.
I watch those things, I'm like, yeah, when am I gonna get to go there? When am I gonna get to do that? And it makes me really excited to play the game.
Yeah.
When am I gonna get to ride the Aero Dalton Imperial? Go.
I was just gonna say, from the forum thread, another thing that people brought up was, because they're kind of touching on it already, was the music. And we had the music podcast, gosh, that feels so long ago, probably this time last year, but it does have some really well-themed music throughout the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does. The battle music is not the best to me, and I know there were a couple abandoned tracks that they had that, like, I don't know, I don't think they were horrible. I've listened to them, but, like, they just chose not to use them. And it kind of suffers from that same battle music repetition where you've got, like, 3 songs, but the overworld stuff and some of the music for, like, the more melancholy scenes was fantastic.
Oh, man. Longing of the Wind? Holy crap.
Yeah.
I saw a guy playing that on a cello on YouTube, and I was like, I was near tears. It was so good.
Wait, which one is that?
How good it was.
Is that just 600 AD? Because they all have, like, lots of different titles.
Yeah,
sing it, Reed.
I just remember being really sad when I heard it. I don't remember how it actually went.
All right.
But yeah, if you look up Longing of the Wind cello, you'll probably find it.
I'll play in the background right here.
So another common theme besides music in the forum throw was several people brought up that the world itself felt really epic. And that there was, for me, it was the attention to detail, that you could always go into houses and have people say interesting things in every era, and that they just paid. It's that attention to detail, that the graphics and everything really fit with each other. When you'd go back to a different era, you'd still see things that were kind of familiar to you, but still different, keeping things fresh. But the world itself, I thought, was it's such an interesting concept, right? The fact that it's the same world, but it just changes really often. And I can't think of a game that's really done that before.
One thing I like about this is that I guess it goes back to just basic or good game design, is where it limits the areas and you kind of see all other areas that you want to get to, and eventually you are you're progressively given more access to those areas.
It's kind of like Zelda, right? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, with this one here, there's no limit in the very end. In the end, you understand you have an unlimited kind of
that you can
access.
Do whatever you want to do. Yeah. A few games give you the all out. Okay, go ever you can beat the game whenever you want to. Right? That's like really different.
Right?
Yeah, you can beat it absolutely whenever you want. From like the first time you get to the Millennium Fair.
Yeah.
For a JRPG, it is ridiculously open ended.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of rare.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, and this builds on what Garrett was talking about with epicness and what you guys are talking about, where you're going to choose a lot of, or whenever certain events are going to happen. And I think that goes hand in hand because it gives you a sense of, I can do anything, but there's constant threat or constant things to do, or there's it's alive wherever you decide to go. And there's just more. Right off the bat. I don't know where to go from there.
I feel like the game starts in, like, it's overwhelming, like, how much, like, you really expect it's going to happen. Because, like, I don't know, like, you see the world map and, like, you see places you want to go that you can't get. And then, like, left and right you're seeing stuff that, like, doesn't really affect you now, but you wonder when it'll come up. Like, you'll see, like, those, the sealed boxes lying around. It's like, whoa.
That foreshadowing is just so, like, oh, yeah.
It was cool.
And how the world changes based off the events of the time over time, where all of a sudden new areas open up on top of that. So it makes you want to rediscover those areas and shows depth within those areas that you first thought, oh, they're just kind of, it's just a desert.
Yeah.
Or just a piece of dirt, whatnot. And there's a whole dungeon that's underneath it, things like
that.
Yeah,
and while the time...
you plant trees and then it gets covered.
Right. I was going to say, while the time travel is there, like, giving life to, like, the world, each time period has its own thing going on that, like, you return back to that time period and, like, find new things happening when you feel like... I mean, if a game's got time travel, why bother with something like that? But they went that extra step to give each time period its own life and its own, like, real purpose.
In fairness, I think they kind of dropped the ball in certain areas. Well, like, maybe. I felt like once you did 65 million BC, like, the two times, coming back there was, like, there was just nothing there.
Fair enough. I don't know. One thing I found really cool about the game is, like... Maybe I'm just a big dork, and, like, my love for this game and my love for Back to the Future have, like, created, like... I'm the biggest fan of, like, time travel. So, like, I just liked going back and forth between the different eras and, like, seeing how the world changed. Like seeing it's like, oh, wow, this continent moved over here and became this. Mm-hmm. And, like, here's this structure. And, like, oh, well, lava's crashed here. And in every era after that, there's something there. And, I don't know, it's very interesting to me.
Yeah, that kind of depth I really like when it comes to the time travel as well. It kind of gives you, I guess, is also the idea of certain characters tying to other characters over time and how their stories intertwine, and looking at not just a 3D aspect of where they're located, but how each of them develop, and even also how the world develops. And with that, that's another thing, is the land is very well tied to the development of your game itself. It's not just the characters you interact with. It's also the land itself is a character in itself.
Yeah, as it changes throughout the game.
Exactly, yeah.
Because it's funny, because you're touching on several things that Mudbaster brought up in his, was that you don't actually... they don't ever just come out and tell you at the very beginning what everyone's story is. Like, oh, you're this... swordsman kid, and you don't really know too much about anybody, but as the game goes on, you do learn about the characters through playing the game, which is the best way to learn about it. You're not told about it. It's funny, because I've been watching those Star Wars reviews on YouTube, where
the angry old man.
Yeah, where he explains, why they're not good, because Star Wars is telling you what's happening instead of showing you. And this game does a good job of that, showing you and like
the gradual unveiling of Magus's character.
Yeah,
that's
so good.
Yeah, it's a really good dynamic to kind of see, you know, oh, perceived as a villain, but then an anti-hero, then actually a victimized kid, and then it's just.
Yeah, that was so cool, especially because, like, I didn't put two and two together the first time I played it until later, like, oh, man, that's totally him, and it's just one of those, like, when you watch Fight Club, and you're like, oh, man, it's totally him. I'm not going to spoil that either, but yeah, it's, that was a really cool one.
What game before that had a story of that sort of depth with, like character development in that way? I can't really think of any.
Gosh. The Final Fantasy VI, Liz? I haven't played the Final Fantasy VI.
It depends on the character.
Was that before Chrono Trigger?
It looks like it's before Chrono Trigger, just graphically, I'd think.
Yeah, it was
Final
Fantasy. Okay. Never mind then.
Thanks.
My words.
It depends on the character. I feel like the Figaro brothers in Final Fantasy VI, probably Edgar more so than Sabin, gets a good backstory development, but some of the others, like, not so much.
I just thought that Chrono Trigger came before six.
Yeah, not so much like Gogo and Umaro.
Right.
Their backstories are not as fleshed out.
But
like Shadow is an incredible backstory that you don't get unless you do side quests.
Right. And that's the thing that Square, especially in that era, they were so good at that, you know.
They were.
Having that depth, like, that you could explore if you wanted. You had the option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did, I think Luca's a good example of that in Chrono Trigger, like, where you get a great idea of who her character is if you do no side questing, but then the little stuff you get at the end, like where you go into her past and see some of the scenes that made her who she was, are unbelievably cool.
Because it's showing you, because they can play with time, and you can go back and experience it instead of telling you, oh, that's how her, you know, happened. Yeah, that's such a more powerful thing that apparently George Lucas never learned. something we touched on earlier was about the kind of the graphics a little bit, about how the feeling of the world and the settings, and Beck brings up in the topic that he was originally attracted to the game because of Akira Toriyama's
the
art style.
DBZ designer?
Yeah, so, I mean, what do you think about that, Liz, as a recent DBZ hardcore fan?
I love me some Toriyama, but his art style is not what I would call varied. Like, I think for Chrono Trigger, he probably made every single character he had in his head, and it was like, that's it. He'll never create again.
And then look at every other work he's made since then, you can be like, oh, that looks like one of those dinosaurs.
You go back and watch Dragon Ball, and it's like, oh, there's Isla, there's Chrono, there's dudes who look just like Magus.
Now wait, was this before Dragon Ball Z?
No,
Dragon Ball Z was well before Trigger.
Yeah, Dragon Ball was in the late 80s. It's like what Ozzy looks like a fat flea, or no, a fat cell.
Yeah,
he looks
like
a Namekian Doesn't he look like sort of like a Namekian sort of?
He does. He's got the little bit of the fat Namekian look to him, and like you can see the look
sort
of Frieza and Son of the Imps. Yeah. It's, I mean, all of his designs run together. It's. And Luca
and Lavos' second form is Cell. Like, no joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
Like, Frieza looks a little bit like Lavos, a bit.
Yeah, it's... You know what? Yeah, Lavos' third form. I remember when I saw Frieza's final form, I was like, that's just Lavos. What is this?
Well, from the perspective of a... this was the first, like Ben said, high adventure RPG that I had played. Mm-hmm. And, I played it when I was 15, I think, and the chance to play a game where you get to leave your family and just get out there and kill stuff with a sword, man alive, I was all over it.
Did you want to do that in Indiana?
I was about to say, this result in you leaving your house.
Is that how you fell off the barn?
Yeah, with a sandwich and some like a bat that you had made, like, put tinfoil around to be a sword.
I'll have you know that I had my own Chrono bandana.
Did you imagine that, like, every year you'd go to Cornerstone and a gateway would open up at the Five Iron Frenzy concert? And you'd get to see what Kokomo, Indiana looked like 400 years ago. Spoilers,
it's the same.
Just as much corn.
but that, and being a kid, being a big nerd who didn't have very much interaction with girls, having a princess interest in me was... That was a big draw for me.
Yeah, I liked Marl. Some people hate her and find her really dumb, but...
Really?
I don't know. I find her, like... I feel like she was good at being sassy without, like, pushing it to the point where it's, like, really obnoxious anime archetypal.
Wait, you're saying
sassiness.
That Isla, like, Laura MW, is not your role model?
I'd always envision Luna is Marl. I don't know why. It's just when I think she had an icon or something like that, and an old form
goer
named
kick guys
Luna.
In the nuts.
Yeah, I was going to say, Marl never kicked Chrono in the dick.
Well, but that does bring up an interesting topic of who are your favorite characters from the game? I mean, it doesn't have to be playable characters. Like, here, John, we'll start with you. Who's, like, one of your favorite characters in Chrono Trigger?
I just like robots, so you'll know who I am.
Oh, we got it.
Oh, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Okay. We'll see. Liz, what's your favorite one?
I gotta go with Magus. Like, that's such a cheap answer, because he's clearly the best character, but he's the best character.
All right, Ben, what about you?
We're talking about playable characters?
No, it doesn't have to be playable.
Oh, man. You just...
All right, we'll come back to you. Reed, what do you got?
What about that crazy fetus creature in 2300 AD?
What about him?
Wait, which creature?
That little fetus creature in the ruins. In the,
oh,
ruin
gosh.
Series.
Yeah. Ooh.
Remember those guys? Oh, those are creepy.
Oh, yeah.
That's my least favorite character.
Okay. Reed, your favorite?
I'm definitely going to have to go with Nu. Because I think I told this on a really old podcast, but the first time I got to the first time I saw the Nu in the game was in the forest, in the hunting grounds, and it was raining, and that Nu walked out, and it scared the crap out of me. And so then I tried to fight him, and he destroyed me. He wiped the floor with me, and I was like, I'm never going back in the forest again.
The little Nu with his big tomato face.
I don't know why he was scary to me, but it was just terrifying.
All right, Ben.
Creepy looking.
Ben, do you have a favorite character?
I would say it's either between Luca or the combo of Masa and Mune.
Oh, not Gato? Oh,
ride the wind.
Gato is pretty sweet, too.
Gato's really my like favorite.
Gato. Yeah, that's pretty great.
Okay.
I always liked how Masa and Moon in Chrono Trigger, and I guess... and. Who came up in Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, had the sister whose name was just, like, Doreen. Like, they have the cool Japanese names, and then there's, like, yeah, there's our older sister, Judy. What a weirdo.
Actually, if it was made in the 2000s, her name would be Aspen.
Aspen?
Or Astrid. let's see, another one I want to bring up from the forum thread that Stoic Mani brought up. And lots of other people brought up as well, was that one of the reasons that the game really appealed to people was when they got to the courtroom scene,
mm-hmm.
and having, like, he said, this is the first time in a game that I remember when I made a decision and I regretted it. Like, the game made him feel right. regret for something he had done.
It's how every little kid first learns about how the justice system railroads poor people. Think about it. It's your first intro to communism snuck insidiously in the game.
No, that is a really cool scene where, like harmless things that you would do in any other game. Like, you go eat this guy's food, or, like, I don't know. Like, in a lot of games, you barge into people's house, and you steal their stuff, and, like, you just talk to them, like, expecting them to be cool with you barging into their house. And that doesn't happen in Chrono Trigger, but just actions like that, where, like, you eat the guy's food, or you don't help the girl's cat, or you... I don't know, you're greedy. That actually comes back and affects the game, and that is incredibly cool.
And don't forget, right before the courtroom scene was all that business in 600 with Yakro, where you're a hero. You save the queen, you save your girlfriend, you are, like, the coolest thing in school, and then you get back and you get court-martialed. So, it's depressing. Like, that's the first time the game hits you over the head with, like, you're a hero, but nobody cares but you.
Politics.
You know what's funny is I remember in Nintendo Power, if you guys remember this, they had like a little postcard that you would send in to enter their contests. And the postcard had like, on it was like, name your favorite games from these lists. And that's how you voted in that What Are the Favorite Games poll.
Oh, man.
And then there was the trivia questions, right? And they were usually the same. And one of them was, and I think it was like a scratch one you could do on one of the Nintendo Powers. Or like, if you scratched off the right answers... you could send it in and get something. And one of the questions was from Chrono Trigger. It was, what something about the courtroom and what's the answer to the first question or something like that. And I hadn't played Chrono Trigger, so I guessed, and I actually got it right, and I was super happy about it.
Yeah, I remember filling those out every time I got Nintendo Powers. The first thing I did was pull the card out, circle Earthbound, and send it back in.
Yes. I think I did that at least once.
I used to go to the news racks and get like
more than you take them all.
I'd tear all the cards out. I still have about a dozen of them. I never filled out from back in the day.
Send them now and circle Earthbound.
Yeah.
This is a new siege.
Yeah, should.
Give him the gnat. Have him take him.
Yeah.
Let's see. The other thing I wanted to ask people along the lines of favorite game characters, what's your favorite era in the game?
Zeal, no question.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, same here.
No, man. I like the present, oddly enough. Or the future.
1000?
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, I guess that would be my second favorite area. I like the present a lot.
Although, riding on pterodactyls is pretty sweet.
I hated 65 million. I just felt like it was so barren and like such an afterthought compared to everything else. Like, here's three houses and two areas and that's it.
But the world was all like raw and there hadn't been erosion and all the mountains are all craggy and it's awesome.
It was cool.
I like 1999.
I wish you could explore 1999.
I wish you could too.
Actually, I was curious myself about that and I looked up a map rip of that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't show anything else other than...
Yeah, it's just a square.
A square would not have wasted their time.
No, not with, like, you know, any other endeavors, like Final Fantasy Dissidia or things like that.
Yeah. I don't know. If you have a time machine, why can't you go back to, like, the day before Lavos, like, sprouts from the ground? Just hang out.
Well, like, I
get a hot dog.
I thought one of the coolest scenes...
See a Blitzball game.
Yeah, like, one of the scenes...
I think you've got your wires crossed, dude.
It's still Final Fantasy, it's Square, they're all the same.
One of the real cool scenes in 99 is when you're in the Epic and you're flying through the fiery sky
to
Lavos.
Yeah.
That's really freaking cool. I like that the most. That's why that era, it's you're only there for, of course, just that one event, but it's just such a cool Epic climax to where you get to.
That was one of the pinnacles of the Super Nintendo's graphical Mode capabilities 7. Too, you know? Mode 7, man, that was the best.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it was a similar thing, like, where, if you went there on foot, like, I think it was through the garbage can, like, you see yourself, like, standing on the ground right after Lavos bursts from the ground. And, like, I always felt, like, jarring, and it, like, really puts things into perspective. It's like, you're really tiny versus this giant guy, but then you walk up to him, and he's like, whatever, he ain't that big.
Well, Reed, I believe Reed had a different thought. Reed looked at Lavos and he thought he was someone else originally.
What?
Reed, remember with Lavos, you thought it was something else when it was rising out of the ground. What did you think it was?
Oh, yeah. When you look at the video of the Day of Lavos and the spikes start coming out of the ground, I'm like, oh, it's Negachrono.
That's his hair coming out.
I thought it was his hair. I was like,
the
wait.
The ultimate Saiyan Broly.
But I could not figure out. I was like, oh my gosh, Chrono's a monster. And I thought we were going to have to like kill Chrono now. And
All right, well, let's start wrapping this up. Does anyone have any final words or thoughts before we turn this over to Kevin? Because I think he's going to talk about Dalton. I'm calling it right now. He's got a couple things he'd like to say in
He can cover the game's sense of humor, since I feel like that's a cool part of it, too. But
you act like he's not going to cover that and everything else.
Yeah. I was going to say, he's going to cover the game, period.
Yeah.
We're actually going to be the final word in his podcast.
Basically. All right, any final thoughts on Chrono Trigger? My final thought, I was happy to get to play it, because I think it's one of those games where it falls into that line of, like a classic book, this is a classic game. I think people should play it.
Best part of the game, Zombor. And not just because that's an awesome name.
That's a pretty good name.
Yeah, actually, for me, Chrono Trigger was required work.
For the company.
This was R&D.
For the company. Yes, and...
Did we write off the purchase of Chrono Trigger?
We did. We bought two copies of it at Best Buy. Yeah.
That is an indirect cost.
So that was probably the best work I've ever done.
And John, guess what? Your next best assignment is going to be playing a Final Fantasy.
Yeah, Final Fantasy.
You're
going to
have a good time. Yeah, I think so. Especially if you can play Donkey Kong on that terrible level over and over and over again. No problem with Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
All right, Ben.
My
what
final
were you gonna say?
Word, well, my final note on Chrono Trigger is to give Chrono Cross a shot if you haven't played it. Because despite the hate, that game has an incredible atmosphere and it is a lot of fun. And you owe it to yourself to try it out.
All right. I'm gonna give myself a treat and do that.
I don't think I'm gonna do. I've heard so many negative things. I'm okay.
I love it. I am a huge fan.
I'm gonna cross it off my list.
I heard it's got really good music though. But I heard that from Liz. So
it's got very good music, very good art, and very good
Chrono Cross?
Yes.
Yeah, I like it. It's just a beautiful game. It is a beautiful game. It has a lot of problems, but
it does
have
problems.
Real gold in there.
But yeah. I think it's enjoyable. Like, it is not as good as Chrono Trigger. I don't think anyone would ever make that debate. But I still think
the soundtrack is better than Chrono Trigger.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know.
So all right. Let's close out. That was good. We're going to hand this over to Kevin for his final word on Chrono Trigger and why he loves it so hard.
What should I do? Should I admit to the Chancellor that I made mistakes? Tried to sell the pendant? Ate the old guy's lunch? Should I remind you that this Yakra thing happened before? Give you a history lesson on 600 AD? What should I do? Should I tell you how much fun it is to go ripping through time? Should I really believe that a wizard did it? What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? Should I kill the guy who killed my best friend, except he hasn't done it yet because it doesn't happen for another 12,000 years? You want to see my shiny red rock? Should I just stay in the prehistoric and lord over all the cavemen? Or should I tell you, I am not a role player. Seriously, what should I do? Should I tell you I'm a famous explorer? In it for the rainbow shell and the moonstone? Should I be who the game wants me to be? Accept my role as a time-space handyman? Maybe I should just go back and kill one of my ancestors so I disappear. Should I stop listening to my friends? They might not be robots, but they're still my friends. Should I try brooding? The weak always strive to be. Should I tag along with some quirky mini-bosses just to make you laugh? Should I keep practicing this bike race until I get the high score? Jumping anacondas! Or should I just start all over again, but with all the same abilities and equipment that I got the first time? What should I do? Should I save the future from a space parasite that's been living in the planet's core for millions of years, cultivating the ability to warp reality and laying its mark upon every era? Should I be what Chrono Trigger wants me to be? For Fangamer, I'm Kevin Williams.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Let's close out this awesome show. We're going to try and do these Why We Love Some Game at least every month, but for the bigger ones for Fangamer, where we're involved in some way, once a quarter. So we'll get up to Donkey Kong eventually, John. That's what he's thinking this whole time. Like, when are we going to talk about Donkey Kong, guys?
Well, I'm just waiting for Donkey Kong Country Returns 2, Return of the Gremlins. So that's what I'm expecting.
All right. So we already talked about at the beginning of the show, ways to contact us, podcast at fangamer.com,
iTunes
reviews.
Twitter.com/fangamer.
Is there any... Yep. We want to throw out. We should throw out Twitters because you know who's got a Twitter now.
Oh, no.
John K has a Twitter.
Gotta hit the John K.
He's at the John K.
He's
like
John
crap.
K.
Now people are gonna follow me. As I know it today, he's only tweeted twice, and one of those was an office scam question. So
I'll redirect it to my tweet.
he's gonna make a tweet. Dot.
Ben, if they want to follow you on the Twitters, what is it?
Twitter.com/BenCarrigan, BenCarrigan.
What about you, Reed Mans?
I think I'm just Reed Man. I never really thought about it.
Why aren't you the Reed Man?
Because I was in on Twitter like in 2007 or something, 2006.
It was still cool.
Yeah, before all these losers found it, like Ashton Kutcher.
I think you should be Reedman 007.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Making a change.
Reedman.
So if you want to follow me, it's twitter.com/Adacron. And Liz...
is Fangamer.
If they want to follow you on Twitter, it's...
Fangamer.
And then let's have Dialga close out the show for us. What does Dialga have to say?
Twitter.com/...
All right, thanks to John and Reed for joining us to talk about why they love Chrono Trigger. Thank you for joining us this evening. And let's go end the show with a happy birthday to the illustrious John Kay.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. He's making his John face.
Happy birthday, dear John Kay.
I can't keep up with you guys.
Happy birthday to you.
Ben's gonna sync that up in post.
I gotta say, it sounds like I'm being assaulted by a bunch of ducks.
That's rare.
Thank you all.
Yeah, that's where we're going after this, actually. Hopefully you like ducks. All right, guys, it was a great show. Next week's topic we haven't made up yet, right? I don't think we did. We thought of some stuff. We changed it up last
week. Yeah, we had a lot of ideas, but they're...
We don't have an idea yet. So we'll post a forum thread, and you'll see it from there. So thank you for listening. Join us next week on the Fangamer Podcast.
See ya.
Adios.